I wonder what would happen if I combined an owl and a bear. Yeah, that's kind of what I thought.
I think I'll call it an owl bear.
Well, at least they're not able to breed. And, oh, yep, all right. Well, I'll just leave that forever.
Oops. Oopsie.
Nature found a way.
Clever girl.
All right, Wizard Jeff Goldblum is totally going to be a thing now.
Welcome to Monsters and Multiclass, your Dungeons & Dragons fix. I'm Kevin Odie.
I'm Jared Bornigle.
And I'm Will Melvin.
And we'll be hanging out with you for a while to talk about anything and everything D&D related. On this episode, we're joined by a special guest, Lex Oldham, as we take a deep dive into the Sorcerer class. Not a multiclass, just the class. We're changing it up on you guys. And then back to normal as we look at the Steel Predator from Mordenkainen's Tome of Foes. Tome of Foes. I did do it right that time.
Yeah, you're right.
So pull up a chair and stick around for a while.
Perfect. The more you mess up, the more energy I have.
It's really our brand at this point. Yeah. Every like three episodes, I don't screw up the intro and then just keep it out of spite. We're not doing it right.
All right. So, as Kevin mentioned, we have a guest as Lex Olden, goes by Call Me They on Twitter. I think when I said like our last next time on, it was Call Me They. Did you recently change that from
nope.
They to They? Okay, but then I guess I've just been misreading it. I thought you were doing like a cool like They joke, but
nope.
That's all right. That's all right. So we met on a roundtable episode discussing travel on the Plot Hooks podcast. Mm-hmm. And since then, Lex, you've been putting together a video series. So I'll let you talk about that and explain what you've been up to.
So I have a handful of projects to do for 5th edition.
Fair enough. Talk about your favorites.
The one that you mentioned is a video series called Backstory and Chill, which is just a pet project because I like commissioning people to draw things, and two, I like narrating for some reason. So it's just a series of, I hire an artist to do a speed draw of a character, and I narrate their backstory, and then go a little into the mechanics behind said character at the end.
Yeah.
And for my other project, which is just a whole lot of third-party content I make, mostly subclasses for 5th edition... Yeah, I've just been doing that for fun, and because it's weirdly easy to do in 5th edition versus other editions of D&D.
Yeah, and what's your experience with other editions? Is 5th edition your first, or did you start earlier?
I started with Pathfinder.
Okay.
I think that was 7 or 8 years ago. Then I got to 3.5. I looked at 4E very briefly and saw that was not for me. And then came across 5th edition, and I've been transitioning from Pathfinder to 5th edition over the last like 3 years. Now I'm fully in 5th edition.
Awesome. And are you actively in a group right now? Are you DMing or a PC?
Currently DMing one group and playing in another.
Good. That's always a good mix up. Which do you prefer of the two?
Boy, in 5th edition, playing.
Okay.
In Pathfinder, I enjoyed DMing more. Something about, like, having rules for literally everything made DMing somehow easier for me. I don't know why.
Less on-the-fly calls.
Yeah. It's like, if I wanted to do something, there was a way to do it.
Awesome. All right, well, great. Now we know who you are. We're established. So what we're going to be doing today is talking about the Sorcerer class. So we got a question from one of our fans here, user Asa1128. And so they say, there's been a lot of talk about the Sorcerer class being considered underpowered and asking us to weigh in. They've got a much smaller spell list known than other full casters. Many don't consider their font of magic and metamagic abilities to be enough to make up for it. And do you guys think the class could use a buff, or do you think it's fine as is? What would you do to buff it? More magic options, more sorcery points. It just keeps going. Point is, how do we feel about the sorcerer? What changes do you think would make it better, if any? So usually like to get some first thoughts. So just, Kevin, I'll start with you. What are your first thoughts on the sorcerer class?
Mixed. if anybody listens to the show regularly, you'll know I really, really love the wild magic sorcerer. But I understand why a lot of people don't, because there's a lot of randomness involved. And if you play it raw, its main ability of the wild magic surge almost never comes up. So you kind of have to homebrew it to get it to the state where I love it. So maybe that's not really fair to say that it's good. Overall, I think the biggest problem, and I'd like to discuss it, dive into it further, is I think just the lack of sorcery points. I think they get far too little sorcery points to really make it viable until you're like level 15 and up, and no one seems to play at those levels anyway.
Right. Will, what about you? What are your thoughts on the sorcerer?
I've kind of been developing my personal theory of everything that's wrong with D&D and landed on the conclusion that it all comes back to magic, and the magic overall was a mistake. And
okay, is this your issue with the sorcerer, or is this your issue with
back on the sorcerer? I think the weaknesses of the sorcerer are inherent to the fact that the strength of spellcasting comes from just access to certain spells that are just like OP, and that would be wizards and stuff like that. Can probably access those the best, and there's other ways to do that. And then the kind of the frosting on the overall spellcaster class, like meta magic and sorcery points, it goes back to what Kevin was saying, and that these limited resources are maybe too limited. I think a lot of these, they saw an opportunity to create this resource usage that didn't pan out very well. Like, even like playing a monk, I'm thinking, I really wish I had more ki, you know? That's got its own inherent weaknesses, but it comes down to these, when you have this big pool of limited resources, it probably should be bigger in almost all cases.
Yeah, I mean, maybe to some extent. I think with the monk, not that this is the conversation for it, but those at least come back on a short rest. Sorcery points, if I remember correctly, are long rest only.
Yeah.
Which is a very big difference. I mean,
yeah,
with a monk,
right
now, we're playing at level 12, and you use like 3 key points per encounter. That's your fault.
Like
That's
six.
Not a failing of the class.
I use like half of them every encounter.
Fair enough. All right, Lex, turn to you. What are your overall thoughts on the sorcerer?
I think there's enough to like save it if you try really hard. But overall, I do think it's a little underpowered, but it's mostly an easy fix for like any DM that's willing to do even a little bit of homebrew. You can fix it to be okay.
Okay, so what do you think like the major issues with it are?
First of all, I got really used in old editions where sorcerers got special spell lists from their bloodlines.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so if I'm a lightning sorcerer, so you would by default get like the like call lightning. Why am I forgetting all the lightning spells?
There's lightning like, bolt.
There's yeah,
one.
Thank you.
there's two. That's it.
Yeah,
chain
which,
lightning.
Which
that's
bolt?
One.
Yeah, but you would get like lightning spells from first to ninth level for free. I'm not saying we need up to ninth level in fifth edition because, but yeah, you got a handful of spells for free based on your bloodline, which meant you were at least always ready to do whatever it is you signed up to do,
right?
Without having to like scour your spell list for something that fits,
right? So. I also noticed like a couple of these problems, but one big one that I saw as well is that they only have a single unique spell, sorcerers. And
yeah.
That is a Chaos Bolt, which was added in Xanathar's Guide.
Mm-hmm.
Their spell casting is just taking from other spell lists. It's not like clerics who have tons of unique spells. Wizards, maybe they don't need to have unique spells, but they have like every spell, so there's something
so
to
I,
that.
I think wizards get a ton.
Right.
I think there's a lot of wizard only spells anyways.
Mm-hmm. Right. But then sorcerer is just a single one, which is Chaos Bolt, which is a neat spell, but I mean, it's in Xanathar, so already like most people haven't heard of it, and
yeah.
Even more people don't really use it that much.
I didn't realize Chaos Bolt was a sorcerer-only spell. I thought they didn't have any.
Yeah, that was at, again, added recently-ish. I mean, Xanathar's is like 5 years old.
Yeah. I didn't realize Chaos Ball was a spell until maybe like 6 months ago when it did like a one-shot and the sorcerer pulled it out. I was like, what the hell is that?
Right. What kind of homebrew bullshit is this?
That sounds fake. So you're telling me if you roll max, it just goes off again?
But like that said, I love that. I love that because it feels like a sorcerer spell. And I feel like that's like, you know, avoiding any and all class specific changes. I feel like just having more spells that feel like a sorcerer spell, things that are kind of wild and things that might like, you know, jump to another target or whatever. Like it changes the damage type, like stuff like that. Just it feels right for a sorcerer.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of perfect. It's a cool spell, especially for, it seems like high damage for first level, 2d8 plus 1d6.
Yeah, low level it's really strong.
Right.
Yeah, and if you roll two eights on the d8s, that's when it triggers again and leaps to someone else, which is also awesome. But I guess you can't really build a character around relying on that.
Yeah. But there's also, like, someone crit with it, and we weren't sure how that works with the rolling the same...
48.
Yeah, we were like, do we just need two eights out of the 48, or what?
Yeah, that's a little confusing. I feel like that's the one time that I just roll the 2d8 and then just double it, even though usually I just, you know, double the dice rolled.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, it went from, like, a crit into a crit, and then it bounced again or something. I was like, what is... And that was my first interaction with the spell. Like, this sounds so made up. This does not sound real. You're cheating.
Right. Before diving into individual subclasses and stuff like that, we should probably talk about the main feature of sorcerers, and that's their metamagic and their sorcery points.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what I was saying, it just feels like this. They get too few sorcery points. The sorcery points are supposed to be, and their metamagic features are supposed to be what makes it okay that they have access to less spells than wizards. And for that to be the case, I feel like as a sorcerer, I'd want to be able to use metamagic and change my spells at least twice per encounter, which you just can't. There's not nearly enough until you're at level 20. Maybe you can.
Yeah.
Your sorcery points equal your sorcery level. So at level 20, you have 20. Backing up from there. So at that point, that's maybe enough. Every encounter, you could probably use two metamagic features and kind of get that balance. Other than that...
There's a tipping point.
You're raising your hand.
No, sorry. That was me trying to talk with my hands. There's a point where you do have enough sorcery points, but it's not in the levels of play that we generally see. I don't think until you get to level 10 and above, you're feeling quite limited on them.
Right. Hell, even when you get it right away you get metamagic at level
2. Well, metamagic's level 3, but you get sorcery points at 2.
Oh, okay. Right. Never mind. I was going to say, there's even metamagic options you cannot use when you first get them, because they cost 3, but you're right. Sorcery points at level 2, metamagic at level 3.
Right. And all like the good ones are going to cast, or are going to take more than one. I mean, unless empowered, I mean, that takes one distant. See... My bigger issue, I feel like, is with the metamagic is actually less around how often you can use it and more how locked in you are into your choices. Because metamagic, you get two options at third level, and then you don't gain a third until 10th level, and you can't change them on a level up. You can't change them on a long rest. You are just stuck with it. So I could see doing something where you give a couple more metamagic points, maybe. I think the idea is that you're supposed to be converting your spell slots into metamagic if you really need it. But I feel like... What?
I say at low levels, those are also feeling very limited.
Totally agree. Totally agree. It's a scarce resource, but I don't know if I think just giving more of that resource is specifically a fix. I guess it does make them more powerful, which they are a bit underpowered, so that's fair. But I still think giving them some versatility at least makes them more interesting and gives them more power, as they can now start to fit into specific situations.
The question is why they are limited on magic options in the first place. It seems like a good idea, but it just doesn't really pan out that way, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But you think they should just be able to have all of them?
Would that be bad?
No.
Honestly, no.
You instinctively, you say, no, you should have player choice. You should be able to flavor your sorcerer how you want. End of the day, like, it doesn't break anything. And it, like, de-stresses character a bit. Because when you do make that choice, you make it forever. And you will permanently be locked out of something at 17th level. You know, four things, in fact.
Right.
It makes sense that this isn't interesting enough to make it a player choice. So I think it's one of those things. Just open the floodgates. Let them have them all.
I could see that.
Right. Or at least be able to swap them out on a long rest.
Yeah.
You kind of prepare them along with your spells.
That was kind of my thought, where, you know, at third level, you can prepare two of them. At 10th level, you can prepare three. 17th level, you can prepare four. But then, like, swap them out on a long rest. That at least lets you prepare for the day where it's like, oh, we're going to be doing like a more social interaction day. I'm going to take subtle spell. Otherwise, subtle is like a really awesome meta magic option that almost never gets picked because it's just not as good as any of the combat focused ones.
Yeah, like unless I'm playing like an illusionist or an enchanter with like mind control stuff, I'm not taking subtle.
Right. But it's really useful.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the right circumstance. It seems to be situational enough where you don't want to waste your one and two pick on it.
Like, who's going to use a subtle fireball? Like,
the guy who's sick of getting counterspelled about it? I don't know.
And then other ones, like distance spell, that's another one where when you need it, it's great. But again, it seems so situational. Whereas, like, I don't want to waste a pick on it when you're losing out on something like heightened spell. We could give disadvantage. Or twin or quickened.
Yeah.
Which could be kind of encounter changing.
Yeah, the FOMO is very strong.
That is true.
Like, I want the distance spell, and it might be really cool when it comes up, but I can use empowered spell every single encounter, and I'm never going to regret it.
Mm. Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you, Will. I'm good with either just give them all at once, or at least, like, just let me switch them around so I can feel like I'm preparing for the day instead of, I don't know, whatever else, just being stuck with it forever.
Yeah, I do like the idea of preparing them like other classes prepare spells. That sounds pretty cool. And also, I would love some more meta magic options, but I also know they got all the cool ones from past editions, so they're going to have to come up with some new ones. Like, the ones that are left are, like, Tenebris, which I think only works if you cast, like, Darkness or something. It effectively adds darkness to any spell you cast.
Oh.
Which makes any... Neat. Yeah, it's like, I cast Fireball. Now a bubble of darkness wherever Fireball hit or whatever.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, and that's about... and that's about all that's left from past editions. And changing the elemental damage, but...
About a year ago, they released a UA with additional class features. They did actually add two or three new metamagic options. I don't remember what they are off the top of my head, but I believe they're going to be in the next book. So I think they are going to be adding some at least.
And Tasha's whatever guide or whatever.
Yeah.
Tasha's Cauldron of Everything, I think it's called.
Right.
Tasha's whatever guide or whatever I believe is the
Tasha's spells and where to find them. I don't...
Okay, I've got it up right now. Because I was looking at this earlier. So the ones that they are adding, at least from the UA, was Elemental Spell, which lets you spend a sorcery point to change the damage type to Acid, Cold, Fire, Lightning, or Thunder.
Yeah.
And then a Seeking Spell, when you cast a spell that requires you to make a spell attack roll or forces that target to make a Dexterity saving throw, you spend one sorcery point to ignore the effects of half and three quarters cover. See, that's one that's, like, cool, I guess, but why would I ever take that over any of the other meta magic options?
Twinned, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Let me see. I could reliably cast Haste on two people for one spell slot, or I could ignore plus two AC for dex-saving throw spells when it happens to come up.
Yeah.
My player just did Twinned Haste last session for the first time, and... For some reason, I did not remember that was a thing I was going to have to deal with. And all of a sudden, hey, the barbarian and ranger, would you like to be hasted?
They never say no. They're never going to say no.
Right, and that would just be three sorcery points, right? That's a third level spell.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Not enough.
Not bad. For the cost of a heightened spell, which just gives disadvantage. Mm-hmm. Haste two people for one concentration, one spell slot.
Yep. It's quite
or,
good.
Or, you know, twin holds or twin compels or charms or...
Right. And see, and that's the reason why I get nervous about saying, like, just let them have all of the meta magic options. Because, like, that sounds like a good idea, but something just feels wrong in my heart of hearts.
And that's you falling for this dialectic of choice. The issue is not they're going to pick the strong ones every friggin' time. Your players are going to come in with a twin haste every day of the week for the rest of your life. They aren't going to come in with the much weaker, easier to deal with ones. And when you open the floodgates, that's all that's coming through. You're already getting twin haste.
You have a good point to a large extent, because right now that's what's happening. Because everybody views twinning as so helpful and useful that why would they take any of the smaller ones? Where if they had the options for the other ones, now they're going to use sorcery points on subtle. They're going to use it on... probably not ignoring cover. That one's pretty stupid, to be honest. but they've got options. And those options now make the sorcery points the choice of how are you going to expend those instead of, you know, other sillier things. I could see it.
How does cover interact with dex saves? I realized I said give a plus two AC, which makes no sense with a dex
plus save. Plus two to the save.
Is it? Yeah. Okay.
So I guess it's minus two to the DC is the... other way of thinking about it.
Mm.
Okay. We could double check that.
I think there's a couple spells that like say they ignore cover. I think there's a couple, but...
But like Fireball, a lot of AoEs, if you have cover, then you get help on the save.
Right. Yeah, I know there's some where I'll say spreads around cover and all that. Others, no.
Mm.
Oh, plus two to bonus to AC and dex saving throws. Okay.
Yeah.
Never mind. It was kind of hidden in the text. Yep, you're right. And then three quarters is plus five. Which is a lot more substantial, but still.
Yeah.
When you're looking at quickened spells, twin spells, or heightened spells.
Yeah. But there's a lot of meta magic they could do, which I would love to see. Like, because the whole thing is morphing spells to work for your character. There's right. So many other ideas that exist, you know? And off the top of my head, this is probably not good at all, but it's like, take an AoE spell and make it single target for extra damage or something. I don't know.
Like a concentrated blast or something. That's kind of neat. It's like careful spell, but, you know, making it, again, focused. And that means, once again, that your limited spell choices now feel a little less limited. Where it's like, well, of course you're going to take Fireball, but what if you could make Fireball single target? Now you don't need Scorching Ray, potentially.
Yeah, there's just a... Mm-hmm. Handful of things that like I said it came up off the top of my head.
Right.
I'm sure there's other things they can come up with.
I think Wizards of the Coast right now, they're kind of paralyzed by this desire to not create these 3.5 mathematical nightmares for themselves. So with something like that, you're almost required to be like, all right, you multiply it by X and then you get Y, and then somebody finds the combination where you're doing like 94 D10 damage to one guy.
You make a valid point.
So yeah, it's a good idea, but they just don't want to do that, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think it needs to be that complicated. I guess to some extent it might step on Empowered, but again, taking that idea of like sculpting it, and which I think is actually the Evocation Wizard's ability, like sculpted spells. But that's just besides the point. You know, just taking that idea of being able to concentrate it. I mean, that can be as simple as add a D8 or like add one extra damage die for each spell level it costs. It gives you an extra damage die, but it also costs you an extra sorcery point. And it's more about taking it from that AoE and turning it into a single target than anything else.
Right.
So, I mean, they have ways around making it complicated, and I feel like that's been well established at this point.
On the topic of sculpt spell, it is pretty much just universally better than careful spell. Like, if that's what you want to do, you want to be a big explodey AoE spellcaster and not have to worry about your friends being caught in it, your best bet's going evocation. Because sculpt spell, it's you could choose a number of equal to 1 plus the spell's level, to not be hit by it. Mm-hmm. They automatically succeed saving throws, and they take no damage if they would normally take half. Where the careful spell is... Oh, up to your charisma modifier. So most likely you could probably protect more with careful spell, but generally speaking, you only need to worry about hitting like your two melee.
Right.
Whatever.
Right.
And all they do is succeed on saving throw. They'll still take half damage.
Yeah. So careful spell does come in handy for like point blank fireball at your feet, but otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not huge on it, especially as you just said with the whole, they still take half damage.
Yeah.
And then there are the other side of sorcery points we haven't talked about yet, the fonts of magic, and flexible casting, where you can turn your sorcery points into spell slots or turn your spell slots into sorcery points.
See, I think that would be more useful if there were other uses of sorcery points. Some of the subclasses have other uses, but not many. Not all, anyway. Was it the Shadow Sorcerer? Yeah, Shadow Sorcerer. I think it's like level like 14. It's one of the higher ones, like 10 or 14 or something. It's, yeah, just spend 3 sorcery points, summon a Shadow Mastiff as a bonus action or something. It's really simple.
Right.
It's just a thing to do, which means, like, at that level, you just, if you felt like it, you could never cast a spell again.
Oh, that's only at 6th level. That,
yeah.
Is it? I thought it was higher.
Yeah.
Also, at level 3, they could cast Darkness with 2 sorcery points and be able to see in it.
Mm.
So, another little nice thing, but...
Yeah, so my main issue is I feel like Font of Magic, which is specifically the turning sorcery points into spell slots, I feel like it's never used in any of my games. Anytime we've had a sorcerer, I don't see them running out of spell slots so often that they feel like they need to start pulling from their sorcery points. Usually if they're that tapped, then they're out of sorcery points too. Yeah. Like it's too late. Right. So... My thought is, do we even need it? I would rip that out, and I would give just something better and more unique for sorcerers. And I think this is my more ambitious idea. So I'm constantly pulled to the Warlock's invocations, because I think they're just probably the best class feature in all of 5th edition, as they make every Warlock feel unique, as long as people don't go the Eldritch Blast Faucet route. So I would love to see something that makes the sorcerer feel like the person is imbued with magic, because that's the whole point of the sorcerer class. The flavor of it is you are born magical. You're basically a walking magic item. And so little things that now just like give you, let's say, simple stuff off the top of my head, dark vision. Boom, now your sorcerer can have dark vision if you need to overcome that. Or something like detect magic once a day, or long rest, or whatever. Or other things that don't have to deal with your eyes. I mean, you can have other magical body parts, but that's all I can think about right now. But something like that, where it just allows you to customize your sorcerer and make you feel magical. Make it feel like the person that is next to you in the party is a walking magic bomb. Maybe, again, not to that extent, but
yeah.
I like that concept where it's like, I want this person to feel magical.
Yeah, like permanent magical mutations you can take.
Exactly. Yeah. That was actually the word I wrote down, was mutations.
That would have been super cool. Okay. Yeah, you got me. Damn it, wizards.
Now, would this be an
That would have been dope.
For sorcery points, like you buy your mutations, or would this be just independent entirely?
I think it'd be independent. I mean, this would be like looking more at a total class rework, so there, you know, be a lot of questions to it, I am positive, but the concept is solid.
So clearly what we gotta do is literally just call warlock sorcerers and call sorcerers warlocks, done, everything's fine.
Alright, I'm gonna stop you right there. I'm gonna run the fence for warlocks here. I understand that they're better and cooler than sorcerers. But that's a good thing.
You're not wrong, though. Currently in 5th edition, I would take a warlock over a sorcerer like 80% of the time.
Yep.
And then you would be correct.
Yep.
I lean closer to 100 to 150% of the time. Yeah, that's my only real issue is that it's such a cool class feature. You're not even stealing it from sorcerers. That's just me being petty.
You mean from Warlocks?
Yeah, from Warlocks, but it is, you are just kind of stealing it from Warlocks.
Yeah, no, and that's, I think that's fine. I think it's good to take the things that work.
I know, it's probably fine.
Yeah, and we can agree that Warlock invocations are cool, they're good, and they give players choice, which, as you're saying, Will, who cares about player choice? No, it's like why people play tabletop role-playing games.
And you just have to make it cool, like invocations.
Yes, and specific sorcerers.
Cool choices. Yeah.
Where it can't just be like ripping off Warlock invocations, because most of them wouldn't make sense. You know, you don't need to have an entire sect of them be devoted to using weapons. That doesn't make sense for sorcerers.
Yeah. Though I can see like some kind of sorcerer subclass where their quote-unquote mutations are literally just invocations or whatever. Like, that's a subclass. Like,
gotcha.
I can see that.
Yeah, and then yeah, you could, from there, if we're talking like a total rework, start adding subclass-specific mutations.
Yeah. That could be cool. Damn, that's so cool. Damn it. Where are my magic mutants?
You know, it's to make it distinct from Warlock, that if it is basically like you get a level 2 and you call them mutations, but they're just special little things that adjust your character, it is literally just copy and pasting invocations with different options. To make it different, I like the idea of don't make it a general thing, 100% tie them to subclass.
Yeah.
Here are 10 dragon mutations to pick from. Here are 10 wild magic mutations to pick from. Here are 10 shadow ones. Because each subclass is so flavorful anyways, it's not that hard to think of like 10 dragon specific mutations.
Yeah.
Like they kind of already get them, like with their toughness, it's supposed to be like they have scales showing and things like that. Later on, they could summon dragon wings anyways. Yeah. So just kind of add on to that.
I'm now kind of mad that's not what we got. Damn it. Though that does make me come back to like an idea I've had before, where like having class-specific feats at some point, that would be a great chain of feats to give sorcerers.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Okay.
Damn it. It's like just positive after
be
positive.
The change you want to see in the world. Make this a class.
You can definitely save these subclasses from themselves with that, just by powering up your options.
Right. No, you got a really good point, because we consistently talk about how bad the which sorcerer is that?
All of them are kind of bad, man.
All of them? I don't know about
okay,
that.
Okay, hold on. There's the one exception. Wait, when everything we said about sorcerer, there's one exception at all times that is a solid and busted sorcerer. The Divine Souls horseshit, and we all know it.
Yeah, Divine Souls pretty darn good. Because they just get like the whole pool of healing, right?
They get the entirety of the cleric's spell list.
Right.
Yeah, that was...
Mm-hmm. So now cleric spells, which could be twinned and heightened and quickened.
Yup.
Is your player currently a...
Uh-huh.
Okay. I was saying, like, the way you're saying this sounds very close to home.
I have been dealing with Twin Guiding Bolt since the campaign started.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I like that one.
And any other really crazy combos from the cleric spell list?
Oh, boy. I'm sure there's some that he just hasn't done yet. Let's see... Well, anything with Cure Wounds just makes healing easier. Twin Cure Wounds.
Oh, yeah.
They did mention that if he ever needs to, he can do Cure Raise Dead. I mean, Twin Raise Dead, which...
Hmm.
Ah.
Does that... Sure... Or Revivify.
When it has a material cost, does that get doubled when it's Twin?
As far as I know, it doesn't.
Okay, that's what I'd expect. But... That's pretty good, then.
Yeah, it doesn't say anything about it.
Yeah.
Just, like, gotta move the bodies next to each other.
Yeah, granted, if you're in a situation where you need to do that, I'm an asshole. I DM'd you into a corner, and I'm sorry.
Right. But yeah, I mean, like, looking at, like, Storm Sorcerer, I feel like that's one that consistent we look at, and it's like, it's just missing something to make it feel actually powerful. Could
more
very easily see just some... What's that, Will?
more than three lightning spells would be
nice. Yeah, more than three lightning spells would be nice. But on top of that, you know, having these mutations, something that just allow it to feel like the sorcerer is a human lightning rod. I mean, things like that are just cool.
Yeah. Right. A mutation where every spell you cast comes out as a lightning spell.
Yeah.
And then triggers the rest of the things. That would get a little over the top, though.
Probably.
But it'd be fun.
Yeah.
Lightning ball. Scorching lightning balls.
Yeah. You know, actually, I don't know if it would really ruin anything.
Changing everything to lightning? Does.
Any elemental damage spell that the Storm Sorcerer casts becomes lightning if you want it to be.
Yeah.
I don't see why. There's not that many things that are vulnerable to lightning damage. Thunder, maybe.
Correct. Right.
But even then, like, who cares? The
constructs.
Like, anytime that I think about, like, oh, would that be really useful in this specific scenario? Yeah, and so are rogues. Rogues can just, like, pick any lock that exists ever and make that not an issue. And has that made our game less fun? No, there's just other things that you have to deal with. Congrats, you're good at picking locks. Congrats, when you fight a construct, you can mess its day up.
The only area I could see it getting a little nuts is Heart of the Storm. The Storm Sorcerer's 6th level ability. Whenever they cast a spell of 1st level or higher that does lightning or thunder damage, lightning erupts from them, and any creature of their choice within 10 feet takes lightning or thunder damage equal to half your sorcerer level. So if you do it where every time you cast a damage spell, it's now lightning, you could basically do that every single time.
Mm.
And free damage is kind of up there.
Yeah.
I mean, when you first get it, it's only 3 damage.
That is another weird thing with Sorcerer. There's, for some of the subclasses, there's like a weird amount of these things work in melee. I have a D6 hit die.
Yeah.
Don't make me do that, please.
That's a really good point. Yeah, it's only 10 feet.
Yeah, and, like, I think, like, a couple of subclasses of stuff like that. Dragon has the AC, which, in a perfect world, that would never come up.
Right.
I think Dragon Sorcerer also gives you extra HP, I think? Or am I imagining that?
You do. You get 1 HP.
Okay, yeah. Woo!
Yeah. Not that impressive, I mean, but it's not bad. It's just...
Yeah.
It's more about the AC.
Yeah. So just to really quick on that Heart of Storm thing, easy way to fix that if this magical world happened where this was a thing, just making it so that the initial spell has to be lightning or thunder. So it can't be one that you've changed the elemental type on.
Yeah. Well, then I feel like it's kind of crap because it almost never comes up because you have, like, 2 options that start at 5th level.
Well, at least it keeps it just as bad as it is now.
Well, I guess it's lightning or thunder, and so you got like thunderclap and thunderwave,
which are also point blank, almost almost melee range spells,
which is kind of their point.
Definitely,
right?
Melee range spells. They're within, I think, 5 and 10 feet respectively. Mm-hmm. I always mix up though which one's the cantrip, which one's the
same
spell, but
constantly
it doesn't matter. One's the stronger version of the other.
Yeah. I think Sorcerer's got Thunderstep from Xanathar's, which is nice.
Oh, that's... that one's like a Misty Step, but you explode when you leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I think you explode where you end up.
Yeah, I always forget which, but it's one of those, yeah.
Which
seems less useful.
Let's see. Immediately after you disappear, a thunderous boom sounds, and each creature within 10 feet of the space you left must make a con save. Okay, 3d10 thunder damage on a failed, half as much on a success. Yeah. Okay, that makes more sense.
Which is, once again, a sorcerer in melee, and I don't know who decided that's the thing.
Yeah. Well, a lot of these kind of seem like oh shit spells. Like, oh shit, I got surrounded, let me thunder step out.
Yeah.
Oh shit, I got surrounded, let me thunder wave and everyone gets blasted and pushed back 15 feet.
But when your entire class is filled with oh shit spells, what does that make you?
Right.
Daring?
I would love to play into that and just like, and my entire thing is run in, explode, leave. That is my, that's the plan. My work here is done.
You can probably make it work. And then just start tossing cantrips from the back.
Yeah. Oh, no, but I gotta go right back in and do it again. Never stop. Okay.
Right. Just like a repeated. Just back and forth.
Only Thunderstep.
Yeah.
Only Thunderstep.
Is that, that's a bonus action to cast, isn't it? Or is it a whole action?
I mean, either way. Whole
action. Right, that's what I was going to say. If you can quicken it, then you really can just sprint in there, like dash if you need to. just...
It is a third level.
Okay, so you can do that like a couple of times.
Yeah. And by the way, Thunder Wave is the first level one that has the pushback. Thunderclap is a cantrip.
Is that a Xanathar's one? It doesn't matter. I don't know Thunderclap. Must not be that good.
Thunderclap is elemental evil. It's a cantrip, just an AoE cantrip, 1d6 thunder damage.
That's why I don't know it.
Thunder Wave is basic rules, just classics.
No, Thunder Wave I know.
Yeah.
Anyways, all right, so we've talked about these mutations, we've talked about meta magic, we've talked about their crappy spell list. What else is there wrong with sorcerers?
Ooh, kind of going back a little bit with the whole wanting to be in melee thing, they don't get enough HP. If that's a thing that you want to like do, make them less squishy, but also they're full casters, they don't need that. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Like, right. I would multi-class them.
Yeah.
Make them a paladin or a fighter.
A plurderer.
Yeah, probably, let's be honest. Yeah, plurderer. Yeah.
Just watch
Thank you for using our word.
Just watch that episode and the video that I'm working on right now, the character is in fact a plurderer. So yeah.
One day they'll catch up. No more sorcerers.
Yeah, the subclasses a lot of the subclasses don't use the resources that they have. Like I was saying before, like a lot of subclasses don't use sorcery points.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, unique ways to use sorcery points based on subclass. Mm-hmm. Totally agree.
Yeah, a lot of them don't take that opportunity, which is unfortunate.
In terms of subclasses, I mentioned it in my first thoughts. Wild magic with a small change, I think, is great.
Mm.
Like I said, we've talked about it a bunch on the show, but since this is the sorcerer episode, I think we need to just go through that. The change being, so wild magic surge is when you cast a sorcerer level of first level, or a sorcerer spell, first level or higher, the DM can ask you to roll a d20, and if you roll a 1, then you roll on the wild magic surge table. People will complain when you play it like that over like a year-long campaign, and maybe came up 3 times.
Mm.
The change we always do is every single time you cast a first level sorcerer spell or higher, just roll the d20, and out of 1 it happens. And then it starts coming up a lot more. A lot of people say it's like, oh, it's just random bullshit. But if you really go through it, the wild magic surge table is weighted to be positive. It is ultimately a beneficial class feature, though, of course, it can screw you over. But I think it's just part of the fun. And don't use the D10,000 tables that float out there because they ruin the class.
No, don't do that. It's the worst.
No. It's like, this is balanced in a specific way to have more positives, a small amount of neutrals, and an even less amount of bad. Where if you make it a D10,000 of all neutral things, of your pants change a different color or a certain smell pops up, it's not fun. It's not interesting. It's not good.
I think I did see a D1. It wasn't 1,000. It was a lesser number, but it was like saying that, hey, I broke out the percentage of good, neutral, and bad, and I kept that the exact same. But it's still just ended up with, like, your pants turn blue. Your pants turn green. And it's like, is this... woo, how fun. Like, just make that make that one. Like, oh, your pants change color, or your skin changes color, and then roll a D8. It's one of these 8 colors. Okay, fine.
Or of your choice.
Of your choice, just sure. Cares. Yeah, of the DM's like, choice.
Does it really matter? I don't know. And then you have Tides of Chaos also at first level, which is really what just makes this class. You get it at first level, you can manipulate the forces of chance and give yourself advantage on any attack roll, ability check, or saving throw. You either then get it back after a long rest, or if you roll on the wild magic surge table again, it comes back. And the specific wording is another DM discretion, which makes it weird. Anytime before you regain use of this feature, the DM can have you roll on the wild magic surge table immediately after you cast a sorcerer spell, then you regain it. We have also homebrewed that, where it's if you use Tides of Chaos, the next time you cast a sorcerer's spell, you have to roll on the table, and then you get it back, which of course then means it's coming up all the time. Advantage, just like crazy. Wild Magic rolls like crazy, and it's a ton of fun. I do worry that's a little too strong, though.
Yeah, I've had that concern as well, which just makes me absolutely hate this ability. Not from the sense of that it's it's bad. It's just the wording makes it either, as you just said, the easy fix of it just happens is makes it entirely too strong. And so now it's up to DM discretion to limit their PC, and that just feels awful. Like, I want to feel like a little bit in control, and I understand that it's Wild Magic Surge, so you need to have a little control lost, but that should be in the table. I don't think it should be in when things are rolled, how often you can use it. I'd rather a pool of five Tides of Chaos uses, and then you can't use another until you roll on the Wild Magic Surge table. I'd rather that just be like a set limit than any other DM discretion thing.
Yeah, that being said, we just spent a bunch of time talking about how the sorcerer feels underwhelming and their meta magic options aren't enough and they don't get enough sorcery points and they don't have enough spells. So then this subclass giving you an easy access to advantage, is it really becoming too powerful, or does it just balance it out?
Fair. No.
Fair point.
I think with how the sorcerer is, rules is written right now, it is totally fine. And you're right, like letting it be a little bit more powerful and more unique makes this the best subclass by far, but that's because the rest of them in comparison are just not great. But if you were to implement just a couple of changes, I think this would get out of hand quickly.
Oh, yeah, if we like did all the changes we were just talking about to the core class and kept this as, yeah, that would be right. Too much.
That'd be a lot.
So one of the other problems that I had that's kind of separate of the subclasses, and I talk about this basically every time the sorcerer comes up as a multiclass, is I find their flavor to be quite lackluster. There are ways to do it to make it fun, but the fact that the only way into a sorcerer is usually not by choice. I mean, there's like the one instance of like, oh, you touch an item that's unstable and now you're a wild magic sorcerer. Fine. That's all right.
It's still not really a choice.
It's not. So
it still happens to you.
So one of the things that I was kind of toying around with is I like the idea of there being a in-canon way to become a sorcerer. This is purely just changing it from a flavor perspective. But if there was like some type of ritual that people could go through, similar to like a warlock, but less in that you're making a pact and more of like you're setting up this specific scenario and imbuing yourself with a terrifying amount of magic. I think that, to me, takes care of that issue where it's like it is something that you can seek out. You can try and gain this power through a very dangerous route. And I would really like something like that added.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Because pretty all of them except for Wild Magic, even Wild Magic, really, the flavor text is, you were born this way. Your dad was part dragon, or you way, way back in the bloodline, there was a celestial that hooked up with you, human, and here you are. It's like, yeah, it just happens to you. That being said, and I know in the past I've been really big on talking about that specifically, how that kind of sucks, especially for multiclassing. The choice doesn't necessarily have to come in from the sense of becoming a sorcerer. It could be a thing that happens to you, and then to still put player agency on it is they're choosing how to harness this power.
Yeah.
Great power becomes great responsibility. Play it up that way. You could still make it. No one could see your mocking hand.
But they can all feel them. They can all feel them.
But yeah, like if you go, hey, DM, I'd like to be a sorcerer. And then they go, yeah. And the next session they introduce your Uncle Benjamin. Look out.
Oh no.
You're a dragon, Harry.
Yeah, no, and I have come around on that, Kevin. I do think there are ways to make it interesting and to still make the role playing aspects there. I mean, it's how you deal with the power. It's not getting the power in the first place. That said, my biggest gripe has been the fact that there's no way to choose to have this power. So I would like that as an option, like an additional option, more than taking away that other side of things. And honestly, I'm just going to say right now that that's a thing in my world, because I can do that. It's purely flavor. You want to be a sorcerer? Here you go.
It's going to suck, but you can do it.
Right.
And I think depending on the bloodline, that like idea of doing the ritual can vary greatly.
Yeah, that's what I like too.
I imagine becoming a dragon sorcerer is a hassle.
Storm sorcerer, just get yourself struck.
Exactly, like storm sorcerer is just you're a storm chaser. Just like it's gonna happen,
right?
It's gonna happen. Right. You're wearing like your ancient rune like gear. That's like this will like channel the magic or whatever. Right. It's like, give it to me.
And it's neat because it makes you a crazy person for one. But two, it's a different aspect to getting magical powers, where a wizard is somebody who works for it their entire life. They're probably going to look down on these types of people, like, very much so, because it's like
trying to shortcut.
Yeah, like, yeah. It's the one who's trying to just become internet famous by getting themselves kicked in the balls. I mean, it's...
Or the not-natural bodybuilders.
Right, and even warlocks to some extent, they're like, okay, well, at least I gave something up for this. Like, this guy just just got struck by lightning like 20 times for some reason.
I had to go find a sugar daddy. What did you do?
So, yeah, it kind of makes them the magical pariah. I like this idea.
Yeah, and I do dig the default roleplay to a degree of, like, dealing with the fact I was born this way. And, like, there's a couple ways to look at it. It's like, because I was born this way, haha, I'm better than you.
Right.
Or I'm born this way, and I'm pariah. And, like you're saying, like, it also depends on where you're from. That changes it drastically. Because I imagine some nations will, like, hold up sorcerers as, like, chosen by God. And other ones will be like, oh, they're a witch.
Right. Right, or there's a million ways. I mean, you could say, like, if you're poor and you're a sorcerer, you might have found your big break. And it's like your entire family has no way of ascending their social status, but now you can shoot lightning out of your hands? Okay, we got a chance. Good thing your great-great-grandpa slept with a dragon.
Right.
Didn't think that would come back around to help us, but here we are.
He knew what he was doing. We all laughed at him.
Yeah, it was specifically with the divine soul in the flavor text. It calls out in some cultures they are seen as like enemies of religion. They're like usurpers and not truly chosen by God, and they have the chance of like forming a cult, and so the church is scared of them. In other cultures, the divine soul are the only ones who are actually held up as religious figures. They become heads of churches, and that saying they're the only true ones with connection to a god.
The one in my campaign, I've been having the church of the god that rose into power, I've been referring to him as Saint. And it has immediately went to his head. They're at the like fantasy equivalent of the Vatican, hanging out with the not Pope.
The Nope.
It's like, yeah, the Nope. It's like, yeah, Saint Greystone, here's your lavish apartments. And the party's like, excuse us? You're a what now?
Oh, that's good. It's like, I watched this guy get his hand stuck in the jar trying to get the last bit of peanut butter. How is this guy a saint?
Man, it is... The roleplay can get really, really fun.
Yes.
Especially if, like... If you go back to the idea of it's, like, the idea of family in the roleplay, too, assuming you're not an adventurer with two dead parents, you know. Because that's the rule. If you're an orphan, you have superpowers. Right. That's the rule.
Yep.
So, like, there's you can do a whole lot of roleplay with, like, if your whole family has powers, too.
Oh, there was a Disney movie that did that.
Oh, was there?
The Incredibles?
No. It was, like...
it's a pretty well-known...
No. It was like, one of those, like, straight-to-TV ones where...
Sky High.
Something. Or... I don't remember where, like, the entire family had superpowers, but the one...
Oh, and one kid didn't.
Yeah, he didn't.
I know what you're talking about now.
Was that Sky High?
I've seen this movie almost 18 times. No, Sky High was...
What did you say, Will?
Sky High was absolutely this film.
You sure?
Yeah.
Well, there was an older, like you said, straight-to-TV movie, whereas, like, it was a world of superheroes, and, like, the whole family had powers, and the one kid didn't, and that was the movie.
Right.
Him pretending that on his, like, 15th birthday, he got powers, finally.
Yeah. And then his parents and family got captured, and they were stuck in a tin foil cage, because that was their one weakness.
I was going to say, yeah, tin foil. Yeah, was yeah. It's up. Up and away.
Up and away, yes!
up and away!
So,
and yeah, because he didn't have superpowers, he wasn't weakened by tinfoil, right, uh-huh. So he was able to right. save the day. Just like punch his way out of the tinfoil.
Right.
That movie sucked.
It was not very good. But you could use that as inspiration for your sorcerer.
That's actually... Secret Time, that's actually kind of what I'm playing in the game that I'm playing right now, whereas I am from a family of sorcerers, and I was the one that didn't get magic, so it became a warlock, and I'm lying.
Oh, okay. I like it. And that'd be even better if, like, later on you did want to multiclass, you're like, they were inside me the whole time.
Damn it, I didn't need to make a pact.
Right.
But that would be just waited.
That's actually great role-playing, though. Could you imagine the regret that a character would have if, like, they sold their soul and realized they just needed to wait?
That would be the worst.
Yeah. But now you're a coffee lock, so.
Right.
Exactly, it's perfect.
Oh, I guess I'll dry my tears with another Eldritch Blast.
No, infinite spell slots below the
yeah.
level.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I don't know, just leaning into that, the roleplay, the default roleplay, it's always been fun for me, and especially like you guys were mentioning before with the wizards not getting along with sorcerers, I've always really stressed that.
Oh, okay.
When I explain that to players, it's like, what's the difference? Well, you see, one got lucky, the other one worked for it. So, do with that what you will.
Right. Definitely a lot of like, anger just stemming from that.
Yeah, my first campaign, I had a sorcerer and a wizard, and they went at it constantly. It was beautiful.
I like that dynamic. Yeah.
It was also really fun because they had such different, like, stat, because one's a charisma character, one's an intelligence character. So one's like, yeah, I can figure out all this magic shenanigans. The other one's like, whatever, at least I get laid, dude.
Chadcasters.
Chad Sorcerer versus the Virgin Wizard.
Yep.
I love it when there's, like, friction like that between two party members. Yeah. When the players could... understand it's just in a game and have fun with it.
All right, so any closing thoughts on the sorcerer class here? I feel like we touched on a lot of interesting stuff, and I want somebody else to take all of our discussion and turn it into a class. But anything else to add?
I got nothing.
The really important thing for DMs with sorcerer players, just give them a bonus spell list. Please, just do it. It's not hard, and it makes their life so much easier, and it makes the roleplay more fun. Just be kind, do the bare minimum work.
And I'm sure others have already put that together as well. Actually, I think I saw that recently, because in the UA that I was just talking about, with like the, or no, I'm sorry, it was like the Clockwork Sorcerer UA, that had an expanded spell list.
Yeah.
So, there's seems like Wizards of the Coast is starting to pick up on that. I'm curious to see if we get some retroactive, like, here's an option for an expanded spell list for sorcerers.
That'd be great.
In the new book here. Fingers crossed.
Oh, also, Divine Soul, as we've said, is very strong. But also, if you like the idea of just taking Sorcerer and slapping on another class's spell list... there's your free homebrew.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, druid sorcerer, warlock sorcerer, bard sorcerer? Why not?
Yeah.
There's wizard. That's your free subclasses for the next, like, three books. Just have fun.
That one's free. The rest, call me. All right. Then let's go ahead and move on to our promotional minute before we talk about the Steel Predator. So if you are not, make sure to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Google Play, I guess, is switching from Google Play Music to Google Podcasts. I haven't gotten it to work, but one of these days I might. Leave us a review wherever you can. Follow us on Twitter. It's @monsters_malty. Follow Lex on Twitter. It's call me they. Very simple Twitter handle. So, of course, links in the description and wherever else you find links. Yeah, and check out any of their work because it's all really cool. And I've had some great conversations outside of the podcast around subclasses and whatever else. So do that. And that's it. That's going to be the promotional minute. I'm going to call that one my best yet. Everybody else hears the other stuff. They already know it. I don't need to say it again. Kevin, stop giving me that look. All right, fine.
I'm not fine, in agreement. Fine.
I'll say it. Subscribe to our subreddit, rmonstersandmulticlass. If you want to support the show, go to monstersandmulticlass.com/support, where you can buy merch. You can work with our dice affiliate, get yourself some nice dice, 10% off using the code MM10, as well as find our Patreon, where you'll get show notes that are specific to our Patreon, occasionally early releases. Now there's a specific tier where I'll work with you as a DM or player once a month and just help you out in whatever ways you want. Are you happy now?
I didn't even realize you didn't say that stuff. I tuned this out.
All right, let's move on to our monster of the week.
This episode's monster is the Steel Predator. The Steel Predator comes from the Mordron School of Engineering. So similar to what we did last episode, but with a interesting twist. They're a rogue creation of something known as a Hexton. They're not a fleshed out species in the current edition, but in previous editions, they represented more of an intellectual flavor to Mechanus's inner circle. One of these things decided, let's create something a little bit interesting, and they ended up with a mechanical monster designed to travel wherever a target may be and slaughter them mercilessly. This did not go well, and they're now doing it on the black market, so you now have the option to throw these at your players at will. So, let's talk about the Steel Predator.
Are we not in a meeting?
You had something to say.
I think these things are really cool. And yes, they're directly linked to the Modrons, which is why we're doing it now, because last episode was the Modron episode. Kind of definitely as a high challenge rating aspect to them, being challenge rating 16, even though they're probably not fighting with Modrons. I love that flavor of just kind of a rogue, merciless predator. They're kind of the Terminator. Last episode or two episodes ago, we talked about the Terminator at length way too many times. And this is just like a cat version of the Terminator.
You know, since that episode, still haven't watched the Terminator.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to go back and watch it.
And I really like this whole just any of these tracking type of creatures. It reminds me a lot of the Yeth Hound that we did an episode on forever ago. But those are also these types of creatures that are like, if they're given the explicit task of go and hunt somebody down, they will find them.
Or the Captain Underpants Man.
Captain Underpants Man. I don't even remember.
What was his
name? I don't
name?
Know.
The art made him look like Captain Underpants, but...
Now you're losing me, Kevin. You need specific callbacks, not...
No, he's specific. That was like the only joke we used that episode, is he looked like Captain Underpants. Yeah. But he was like a demon with a gun.
Like graphic novel type thing, yeah. Captain Underpants. I don't think they were graphic novels, but...
I would not consider Captain Underpants graphic novels, but... Yeah, no. That's really neither here nor there. But yes, I really like them because a party of player characters is really likely to piss off somebody important, and somebody important is exactly who's going to have the resources to get this type of creature. So it's really easy to think of scenarios to, or just, you know, at some point the party did something, somebody didn't like it, here is the retaliation.
The Orthon, by the way.
That's still on that. Okay, Orthon, thank you.
Okay. We're moving on. Anyways, yes, that's definitely the most clear-cut way to use these. At a high level, the party pissed off somebody with connections and money, and they contacted the Hextrone that makes these. Had one commissioned, and the Steel Predator sent after them. They are able to travel through all the different planes and realms, and they are relentless and unending. They're a construct, so they don't need to drink, sleep, eat, or breathe. Nothing stops them, really. They could cast plane shifts, what, 3 times a day for themselves only, so pop to wherever they need to go. They always know where their target is, up to within 1,000 feet, and then from there they have to track them the old-fashioned way, but that's a pretty big benefit. And then once they get them, it's a hell of a fight. They ignore all other things in combat and go just for their target, which kind of, it's real scary. That's like your D6 sorcerer or wizard.
Oh yeah, if it's like the healer of the party, ooh.
Yeah, you put on your life cleric.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Someone specifically mad about Twinned Haste.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to do anything to draw its attention away from its target or anything like that. And its stat block is not anything to laugh at. So to dive into that, its armor class is 20, hit points 207, strength of 24 and con of 22. The rest, its int is only 4 and the rest are not anything remarkable. It has resistance to cold, lightning, necrotic, and thunder damage, and is completely immune to poison, psychic, and bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing from non-magical attacks. At level 16, I would hope all of your martial characters have magic weapons, though.
Yeah.
And it is immune to being charmed, exhausted, frightened, paralyzed, petrified, poisoned, or stunned. All a lot of just real classic construct stuff, so you're not doing much to just shut this thing down.
Also, I'll add that it's got some skills of perception plus 7, stealth plus 8, survival plus 7, all of which seem incredibly fitting for something that's supposed to be tracking down creatures. And
yeah, to track you, it's going to be survival roll, sneak up on you, stealth roll, yep. It has blind sight out to 30 feet, which could definitely, especially as you get to higher level, there's stuff that impacts that, like darkness is not going to slow this thing down or trying to turn invisible or anything like that.
I actually missed the blind sight.
Yeah, that's always one that's really easy to miss because, I mean, it's just under senses, right? But think of how awesome that would be if the party knew this thing was coming after them and they're like, that's fine, I'll just cast invisibility and it'll just ignore us for now, right? And it's like, no, that doesn't stop it even a little bit. It knows where you are.
Right.
Sorry, fam. It knows what's up.
Yep.
It has innate spell casting 3 times a day each. It can command cast Dimension Door, self only, and Plane Shift, self only. Dimension Door is basically just like a super misty step. I think it's like 400 feet or something like that. 500 feet.
Yeah, but it is an action. It's a whole action, though.
That's true, yeah.
For 500 feet, that's what justifies it. You're just...
Right.
You're ending whatever threat you might have been avoiding and getting exactly what you need.
I have some problems with that being the option here and there being nothing else, but I think we'll get to that later.
And then plane shift also 3 times a day, self only, where so it could just shift between the different planes and no issues there. It is resistant to, it has magic resistance, so it has advantage on all saving throws against spells and other effects, and its weapons are magical. Finally here, just to wrap this up before we dive into the discussions, actions, it has a multi-attack and makes 1 bite and 2 claw attacks. These are nothing crazy, though the damage is on the higher side. Its bite is plus 12 to hit and 2d6 plus 7 piercing. Its claw is plus 12 to hit and 2d8 plus 7 slashing. And then finally, Stunning Roar, which is a recharge of 5 to 6. It emits a roar in a 60-foot cone. It causes anything caught in it to make a DC 19 con save. On a failed, it takes 5d10 thunder damage, drops everything it's holding, and is stunned for a minute. The stunned creature could repeat the save at the end of its turns, like a typical thing, which is a pretty powerful cone
yeah, spell. That ability is absolutely terrifying.
My first question, though,
yeah,
why a cone? It's not like sound only travels in a cone, right?
Right, but it's cooler that way.
I thought about it. So this is a steel predator. Its entire body is steel, which probably has a lot of sound-canceling properties to it. It's going to muffle it. So it comes out of its open mouth. And just
okay, you know what? Cone.
And like in terms of it like bouncing and reflecting, it's not strong.
Regardless of whatever that explanation is, because I don't think that's entirely grounded in physics, but I don't care. It's magic. It is supposed to be like a single target thing. It's only focusing on one creature. So for that alone, I'll say the cone also makes sense. And maybe the steel body thing. Maybe.
Definite sound. I mean, I don't know. If you have a lion and it is roaring and you stand in front of it and then behind it, and it will sound significantly louder in front of it. It's just its sound projector that way.
Projects in a cone.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder how far away that can be heard from.
Like, I would go like a mile. Let's just go with a mile. 5d10 thunder damage. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty fair. So yeah, I mean that's an awesome ability. One thing that I was immediately kind of disappointed with, though, is that you kind of expect for this to be a single target or a single enemy in a fight. There might be some possibility to add some other creatures in with it, and I'll talk about that. But I feel like it's really limited in its movement in a way that seems quite odd to me, where it has no way of getting out of combat. How I would expect this to play out is you know, or at least figure out, who this thing is trying to target. And if that is your squishy, their first move is going to be backing up. And now your barbarian is right in front of this thing and is locking it down. And maybe you have more than one martial character that's just all starting to lock it down. It now has to use an entire action in order to get out of there unscathed. Either dimension door or disengage or whatever. And I feel like this thing is just ripe for a bonus action disengage for free. It seems to me like it's not slippery enough, you know, for something that is such supposed to be, again, so single target focused.
Well, one thing to keep in mind, it does have that stealth skill. So it could just be avoiding that fight altogether and just like, okay, that has people. I'll just leave and come back later.
Mm.
So that's always an option.
Yeah, so like it's waiting until they're least expecting it, until it's like, you know, they can get them separated.
Granted, it's not very smart, so it might not have that idea.
Right.
But maybe, like, if you're fighting in the woods, it'll, like, the barbarian gets in its way, dimension doors away, hides in the trees until it thinks it can jump on the target or something.
Okay.
As far as initial combat, yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. As far as disengaging is concerned, I think the spirit is just, it doesn't care.
Yeah.
It would not take the disengage just run, action.
Take the hits. And that's so easy to say, but then you realize that it only has 207 HP, and it's not going to be resistant to any of these physical attacks. A paladin is going to destroy this thing in a turn.
A paladin's going to destroy almost everything in the book in like a turn and a half. Right. So if we use that as a gauge.
Unless it is able to actually like slip in and out of combat, or I don't know if combat's the right word, engagement. I don't know. I feel like I really want some ability like that. I want it to feel almost like a very deadly blink dog, where just every turn it's just like disappears from where it's at and reappears 30 feet somewhere else, so it can just continue hunting down its target.
I think an easy way to make it more dangerous is, because like we just said, it has intelligence of 4, but if you just like make it smart, then all of a sudden, this is the scariest thing.
Yeah.
If this thing could plan...
Right.
You're done.
Wait till they go to sleep. wait till the target is the one on watch.
And question, can you cast Dimension Door on an unwilling target?
Not with this one, because it's self-only.
Okay. Gotcha.
Otherwise, that's still a good question.
Yeah.
You could bring along an object. You could also bring one willing creature, no size or smaller.
I figured I'd mention. Because, like, if it could bring along unwilling creatures with its dimension door plane shift, it's plane shift alone. That'd be terrifying. Right. You just never see it. It's just your wizard's gone in the night.
Yeah. And that's getting to the point of, I don't want to say, well, I'll just say broken. That would be a broken encounter.
Yeah, that'd be broken. It'd be terrifying.
Or it's kind of also stepping on toes of the bone claw. That's
that is
the
true.
Thing the bone claw does.
That is true.
Grapples and teleports away.
But that's not a problem. Mm. I mean, monsters step on each other all the time, those weirdos. But I mean, that's just going to happen as long as they overall feel different. The Bone Claw doesn't feel like a hunter. It feels like a stalker, which is somewhat different, in my opinion.
Though, taking that and, like, doing that could be a way to explain away a character being, like, a player being gone for a few sessions or something. Yeah.
They got like, eaten by a steel predator.
It teleported away, and now you gotta go on a plane shift adventure to get them back or something. That could be fun.
What I do love about the plane shift is, I guarantee you, if the party saw this, their first thought is going to be banishment. And they're gonna get that banishment off, and they're gonna be like, we did it! We're all safe now! And then just, next turn, and it's back.
I was imagining, like, not just a normal teleports back in, I was thinking, like, a creepy, like, claw ripping out from, like, another reality.
Yeah.
Claws its way out.
That's actually a good point, because I was thinking about how it's spellcasting flavor-wise disappoints me a little bit. Something about giving a construct spells feels odd, but you putting it that way sounds awesome, where when it plane shifts, it's tearing a claw into another plane. That's cool.
Oh, we did it! What is that ripping noise?
And in regards to its stickiness and how it, you know, a paladin's going to destroy, don't forget about its stunning aura. That is really strong. A DC 19 con save is very high. Stunned for a minute. I mean, I imagine that's how this thing would open combat. It would go for a surprise round and start with a stunning roar and probably shut down most of the party for a few rounds.
Especially if it managed to get that stealth off and that's its surprise round.
Yeah.
That'd be terrifying.
So, yeah, totally agree there, and I think that would be the normal play. The other thing that I was really hoping for, though, that I don't see is a pounce ability. And I feel like, once again, this is just really open for a pounce ability where it, just the basic, if it moves 20 feet and takes the attack action, then it can take a bonus action to make an additional attack. I feel like that works really well with...
Right, or knocks him
prone. Yeah, knocks him prone. Thank you. That feels really fitting for that hunter stealth aspect where they're like hiding up in the trees and just come barreling out and pouncing on this person and just immediately start tearing into them, and then as they're like claws are on top of this person, next round just look up and let out that horrifying roar as they just continue to bite into their prey, basically saying like, everybody else stay back, I'm busy.
Right,
so I would definitely I would add a pounce ability to this without a doubt.
Yeah, and to really make this deadly, there's no reason whoever paid to have the Steel Predator commissioned and sent after your party have the resources to pay for two.
Mm-hmm.
Or 15.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's not one of these. It's every time one is commissioned, one is made, it goes out, it does its thing, it comes back to the City of Doors where this Hextan is located, and then it gets broken down to then be remade into a new one.
But yeah, like, the idea of, like, a pack of these is terrible. Like, one for each party member would be horrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're all immune to stun, by the way, so they don't need to worry about getting caught in each other's roars.
Ooh. And I don't know if we mentioned it, but it also has advantage on saving throws against spells.
Right.
Yeah.
Which means if you do get that banish off... might not work anyway.
Right. Yeah, no, that's rough. So, I mean, it there's a lot here to make it feel like a challenge rating 16 fight. I do like that idea, though, of just like, yeah, just send multiple of these. Why not? Screw it. The other thing I was thinking of is if you did want to have some minions around, first thing that came up in my head was around Avatar The Last Airbender. There's like that giant... Oh,
the anteater thing.
Yeah, the anteater thing. And it like can track down, but like having somebody who's specifically following that to like ensure that the job is carried out is very fitting. You could have a whole party of them where you're using this to track and, you know, to make sure that it gets killed, but still there's like a group coming with it.
Yeah, and it is large size, so it can have someone riding it.
Or something like the Orthon.
Oh my god, that'd be so good.
That would be so good. Like, it's basically the ranged version of the hunter.
Okay, so now let's actually talk about the Orthon a little bit to remind people what it is.
Yeah, challenge rating 10, 105 hit points. Yeah, it's a devil, and its whole thing is attracts people down for various reasons. I don't remember the exact lore there, but it hunts and tracks individuals down to kill them. Its main thing is its infernal crossbow. When it hits you, apply one of the effects, and it's like additional acid damage. You can make it blind. You could thunder damage, entangle them, paralysis, things like that.
So just imagine your party just walking along through the woods, and a steel predator with Captain Underpants riding it comes in, and just that's a tough fight. I would not want to be on the receiving end of that.
Alternatively, if anybody remembers the not-so-great movie Smoke and Aces, which I think was also a ripoff of a different film, this is a great add-on to the Entourage of Competing Assassins arc, if you're really curious about that.
That's
there's
cool.
No reason Orthon would work with a Steel Predator or vice versa.
Right.
At best, they would be neutral towards one another. The Steel Predator probably, given that it's got a 4 intelligence, it probably doesn't care about anything, but will kill anything in his way.
Wouldn't that be great, though? Just like the party just receives so many bounties on them that they have like assassins competing to kill them.
I like that a lot.
That sounds fun. That sounds like a fun thing to deal with. To a degree.
Right.
Especially if they end up like showing up at the same time and all that.
But like I just like to imagine they're just like walking through the forest, again, just keeping that as the example, and they just see this crazy fight breaking out and they're like, wow, wonder what that's about, and just keep walking.
This is reminding me of a monster I used last session called a Banderhob, which is like the CR5 equivalent of this thing.
That's the frog one, isn't it?
That was we did that during our Summer of Frogs.
Yeah, it has like the same tracking ability. But yeah, it's just like a big frog with a sack. It puts people in, like.
Right, it swallows them, right, and runs off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, like, you got like a herd of Banderhobs, a couple of Captain Underpantses, Underpants Eye.
Yeah, Pants Eye, of course.
Pants Eye. Or a single Captain Underpant.
And then a steel predator. Definitely. And some Yeths, because those just throw them all in. All of the trackers going after the party.
Yeah. And they're all really different and flavorful, and I like that. So it's not just like, here's 10 different human assassins.
They're
all the rogue class.
There'd be that one human assassin who shows up, the steel predator turns. Nah,
right. Ain't worth that bounty. Just bolts.
And then you make a pact with like one group to kill the other one.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
But when this is done, we're coming for you. Okay, dude. Yeah. Whatever you say, bud.
So the other way to use these is they do have the rogue killers subsection here that basically says sometimes they fail. Sometimes the steel predators, their programming goes haywire and they turn into these rogue creatures that usually stay within a certain area and then kill creatures that kind of fit the description of their prey. So that's like a really easy monster of the week type deal if you want to throw that at your party, where they just, come into a town, it's getting harassed, everybody who's named Kyle is dying for some reason.
For some reason, this town of 70 villagers has 33 Kyles.
I mean, like, it's too many Kyles. You gotta thin them out somehow.
Yeah.
And it turns out it wasn't even damaged. Someone just went, no, I just really hate Kyles. I modified it.
It's another great one shot, the Steel Predator of Kyleton.
A thought I had when I read that section was it can make for a fun murder mystery if you think you're going for like a serial killer or something.
Yeah.
It turns out
it's just a confused robot.
Yeah, but like
that's pretty cool.
That you have a suspect and like he's like, I'm innocent, I swear, and Steel Predator.
Right. Yeah, because it would kind of fit that serial killer vibe because there would be a type.
Yeah. It's like, it's killing young women with black hair that are like 5'5" or whatever, you know?
That'd be pretty awesome. That'd be the craziest episode of Criminal Minds ever.
Right. Like, and it just turned out to be this weird robot cat. Right. We don't.
What a tonal shift.
Surprise, it was an episode of the X-Files.
That's No, that's really cool. I'm totally on board with that.
And then there's the whole other use. There's when your party gets higher and has access to plane shift, no reason they couldn't hire one of these.
Yeah.
And now you have a temporary party member to fight alongside with. Like if you know the BBEG or whatever is really powerful and you need help, go get yourself Steel Predator.
Yeah, I like that. And
alignment check there, buddy.
I don't know. I mean, if you hire it to go after the guy who's trying to like destroy the world.
Oh, I hear you. I hear you. But still, alignment check. I'm checking that alignment, bud. It's a little bit on the evil scale.
This thing has no concept of like mercy or like we're going to bring him in. It's just, no, it must die.
Right.
I'm with you, though.
You can be like, oh, but it's a super bad guy, but you're still standing, you know what, like 2,000 pounds of steel cat to tear this guy's throat out. I don't care what he did.
With us.
Okay.
But like,
right.
What a way to...
We'll witness its actions.
What a way to end the campaign, though, if you just hired it and it succeeded.
Right.
I imagine it would be like a thing you have to, you're trying to keep up with it to fight alongside it. And then maybe the DM throws a wrench in it and something does go wrong and now the party has to put it down.
Oh no!
Yeah, I mean,
Sparky! Oh,
Sparky, no!
Well, yeah, because during the fight with the big bad guy, it can turn into one of these damaged ones. And you think it went home, but it's just stayed around and is going after anyone that looks vaguely like your villain.
What I was going to add was that the hexadrone price, it just says it's steep. It doesn't say that it's a monetary cost, so it could very easily be like how your party deals with something, but you give them other shit to deal with because of that. So, I mean, if to take out the like actual big bad evil guy, that's probably a little bit boring, but if it's like the bad guy of an arc, I don't know, something about that just seems, it seems unique. I feel like a party will remember that forever. The time that instead of going directly to a fight, they hired a steel predator to kill the person that they needed to kill. And that's like,
I can't remember. We did something and they were just incredibly good at escaping. Like obnoxiously so, more so than anything I'd seen in the monster books before. But the challenge of the fight would have been killing them. Like, without them leaving. I can't remember what it was, but that'd be an interesting solution.
I think that was the Rakshasa. The Rakshasa was like...
That was up there.
The fight itself wasn't hard, but like it was really good at just escaping whenever it needed to.
That's a great
Rakshasa way to... Rakshasa have the whole like respawn deal going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that could be like your solution for it. It's just like, oh yeah, so instead of us finding out how to actually stop the Rakshasa, we're just going to hire a steel predator who just keeps killing it.
Right. Or you have to kill it in the Nine Hells, which is the steel predator.
Could do.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could do
See,
it. Yeah.
There
yeah.
we go. So that's like, that's a cool solution. And again, I think a party's going to remember that forever.
Right. And yeah, make the price a drawn out, interesting quest they have to go through. Yeah. And another wrinkle in it is the steel predator needs something that's been physically part of its target, a lock of hair, a well-worn glove, much used weapon. So you also have to acquire that.
Which would make sense if you'd failed to fight what you were intending to fight, like cut off a whatever part. Bam.
Yeah, that'd be like some subtle setup by the DM to be like, oh, you cut a piece of his cloak and somebody's like, yeah, I guess I'll grab that. Why not? And find out it comes in handy later. Or knowing most parties, they forget it's in their inventory and then go on a crazy quest to grab it just for you to remind them when they're turning it in.
Also, another thing you could always do is just like, well, I'm just saying this because this happened to me with the Banderhob that happened that I had last session. Where like, the monster they were fighting, its job was to get something for the Banderhob, because the monster wasn't going to survive the fight. But the big bad villain's like, hey, these guys keep causing problems. I want to keep I want to keep an eye on them. I'm going to have a Banderhob just like track them everywhere. But the mission to get something to track them with failed, so they just found a banner hob with no job in the middle of the woods. Oh. So just sitting there waiting for something to track, and they went, hey, we have some stuff from the other villain.
Interesting.
So now they have a pet banner hob, and I don't know what to do with it.
Well, you've made your bed.
I did this to myself. I was like, okay, if they're going to track them, they need something. So, like,
ooh. Right. So, that's just a good way to do it in general. Giving the party something to do that tracking is just fun.
Yeah, but, like, with that in mind, like, if they find a steel predator that just doesn't currently have a target, they just find one that the owner died in the middle of setting it up or something.
Whatever. Oh, but they're like with the instruction manual in their hand still. Like, yeah.
But like for some reason, they just find one that is like halfway through, like being set up. It's like, hey, moral quandary, guys.
Right. Yeah, kind of. Because I mean, it's like, yeah, you can get out of whatever your next quest is pretty easy by just sicking this thing on it, but that might be a little gruesome. Maybe they don't deserve to just flat out die from a steel predator. They should be brought in and whatever, but here's the easy way. Enjoy.
Presenting the party with an easy way is always fun watching it's always fun to watch the argument ensue. But boy, getting monsters as pets is always it's always a time.
That's something that I've avoided a lot, to be honest. Giving a monster as a pet, it scares me.
Yep.
If I do that, I kind of take a page from the revised Rangers rules for like their animal companions and everything. Okay. I just kind of nerf it to be in line with that.
That's fair enough.
So the one of my players, like, so I give my players like special perks or whatever. One was like, I want a pet Shadow Mastiff. I'm like, okay. He's a CR1 Shadow Mastiff or whatever.
Right. I say it's not like the Rangers where it can then come back easily. It's like if it dies, it's dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you do give monsters as pets, consider nerfing them maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, a full on steel predator is probably not gonna be a good addition to a party.
Just a permanent steel predator in the party would be, oh, balancing that as a, like, balancing encounters would be the worst.
You're
just
done. You're done. They won. They won D&D.
Yeah.
Move on. Time to start a new campaign.
What do they keep in mind? Because it's a construct, it probably couldn't heal over time.
Yeah, it doesn't say it in the rules, but I think they still could. I don't know.
It would make sense to me if they needed like someone to directly repair them.
So most healing spells do have the rider. They don't work on constructs.
Mm. Right, where stuff like mending, that's how you repair the steel defender, the artificer's companion.
Yeah, but that doesn't have a rider in it. That you have to add it to the monster itself. So this one does not have that.
Right.
And it's kind of understandable because it is a like one and done. You go that direction, kill it or die.
Yeah, that's true. And the thing that created it obviously these aren't easy to create. If they were, then everyone would have a steel predator. So there's complicated inner workings. So yeah, maybe it is impossible for a normal person to heal it.
And that could lead to a kind of even scarier version of this thing where it's like you beat it, but it escapes and a mangled, like jacked up version shows up later.
Mm.
Like, one of the legs bent in the wrong direction, just, like, hobbling at you.
Some reason it's tries to twice as fast out of nowhere because of that.
Yeah.
The legs were just holding me back.
I have transcended.
Which does actually make me think of something that I was facing, and that is that a steel predator makes zero sense in the world that I have set up. There are no Modrons. There's no Mechanist. Constructs are really limited. I could really see just reflavoring this as a creature if you wanted to. And not like losing out too much. You might need to change a couple of things around, but I very much so want to put this in as just a straight creature that, in the same way that like a gibbering mouther is made from a crazy wizard, just here you go. A crazy wizard takes the place of everything the Hexadrone is supposed to stand in for, where they're making these in like the black market. People have to deal with that, but it's just like this basically looks the same, but instead of it being steel, it's flesh.
The flesh predator?
Yeah, see, I didn't call it that for a reason.
Well, I can't imagine why. Oh no, the flesh predator with totally different condition immunities and all resistances. Muna?
Well, see, if it kept all those condition immunities, that would make it scarier as a creature, I think.
Yeah.
It's like, how? It's made of flesh and blood. Why can't I stun it?
Because the wizard accounted for that.
Because it's just that good.
I loved lazy DMing. The wizard didn't want it to be stunned and paralyzed or poisoned.
I don't know what more you need. I mean, literally every world you play in is just made up by somebody who just says, because I said so.
Mm-hmm.
Like
deep philosophical implications with that.
And it tracks with a lot of the monsters in the 5th edition. Like, a lot of monsters are just like, a wizard did something dumb.
Right.
If I remember correctly, owlbears are because, like, a wizard just got bored one day.
And turned out...
I wonder what would happen if I combined an owl and a bear. Yeah, that's kind of what I thought.
I think I'll call it an owlbear.
Well, at least they're not able to breed. And, oh, yep, all right. Well, I'll just leave that forever.
Cool. Oops. Oopsie.
Nature found a way.
Clever girl.
All right, Wizard Jeff Goldblum is totally going to be a thing now. Only speaks in Jeff Goldblum quotes.
a thought I had was, like, if, like you were saying, if this doesn't work in your setting, like, going the monster route, this could be, like, a one-of-a-kind thing.
Yeah.
Which would make it even more, like, because, like, I don't know why, but I really just want to make this thing, like, a horror monster. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd watch a movie with this thing hunting a bunch of teenagers and
it's
because it
has a xenomorph face.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
It's like, the guy drawing this obviously saw that and was like, yeah, that's different enough, right? He probably even erased the tongue.
Yeah, this is a xenomorph pet. I like that. I'm totally with you. And if I were to go that route, I would really use that dimension door and plane shift as like quick calculated attacks where it like comes in, it almost kills somebody, and then it just leaves. And everyone's like, why did it leave? What's going on? And like, it's just a matter of it trying to find that perfect opportunity to really take you out. Or just terrify you.
Mm. Also, now that my brain's on the horror movie kick, it'd be really easy just to turn this into, like, a dude with these powers. Just a dude jumping out of dimensions coming to stab you.
Yeah.
The world's most famous assassin.
Yeah, oddly enough, the shortcomings of the stat block make it very adaptable. Whereas nothing here says this is not just... Some guy.
Maybe the roar.
I mean, biting claw.
The claw I didn't question. Because obviously the claw, he just has Wolverine claws. I mean, that's...
Yeah, obviously.
Duh, Kevin.
Okay.
Jeez, come on.
Ooh, headbutt.
Right, of course.
But yeah, I mean, that's just a matter of reflavoring it. But the steel roar, a little bit. That's kind of specific to a creature. Yeah. Any other thoughts about the steel predator or ways to use it?
You got one on your shoulder there, Lex.
Yeah. I'm a cat. Shut up. Yep. How you doing, bud? You good? Okay.
But no, I got nothing else.
I don't think I have anything though. Like, I do love this thing. It is
spooky.
It is definitely scary, and I love that.
Yeah, they're dope. Throw them at your party. Let your party hire them. Then punish them for what you let them do.
It is making me... It's reminding me of... I don't remember what it's called. I think it was called the Hound of Tandalos or something. It's, I think it was from, like, Lovecraft, and then they put it in like, 3rd edition, oh, okay. Or 3.5. It is a teleporting dog that will track you. I think when it comes after you, though, it's because you, like, you time-traveled, and that's a no-no, or something.
Neat.
But the teleporting thing it did was specifically, it can only teleport to any part in a room that has a 90-degree angle, but it can teleport for free at all times.
Huh. So
Lovecraft stuff is weird.
Yeah, the way to beat it is to fight it in a circular room.
Exactly.
Huh.
Yeah, something about teleporting quadruped made me think of that. Well, you know, teleporting quadruped.
Right. Something about it. I can't put my finger on it. I think it's the teleporting quadruped part. All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. Lex, thank you again for joining us. This has been absolutely awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Where can people find you?
You can find me at Twitter at Call Me They. You can find me on YouTube at Call Me They. Internet's hard.
Yes. I don't know how to describe it on YouTube either. Just, yeah, same username. It's easy enough.
If only there were some kind of way to just click on the text and it would take you to a website. Scientists are working on it right now, I promise. Don't worry.
The technology will exist one day.
Great. All right. Well, Kevin, take it away.
To all our dear listeners at home, thanks for listening. I doubled up on listeners there. All dear listeners, thanks for listening.
You have one job. Do the intro, do the outro. Because that's two jobs, but
yeah,
I'll take it.
Next time on Monsters and Multiclass.
Join us as we discuss the Artificer Wizard multiclass and then the Steeder from Steeders. I think there's a male and female variant. And we also get to answer the question is, what is the most interesting three-class multiclass you can think of? Ooh.